You're listening to 4AD Forages. On this episode, we have Pixies drummer Dave Lovering speaking with YouTubing metal detector The Nugget Noggin about their shared love for treasure hunting.
Michael, I gotta say, first off, I am a fan of your channel. You have such enthusiasm.
Thank you. I was surprised you'd seen my videos. That's really awesome.
I've been doing it since I was, 10 years old. I've been into everything, all the forums, YouTube, everything like that. It's my passion, my life, and everything like that. I'm sure you agree.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm well aware of what you do and stuff like that. And yeah, kudos, man. You rock. Yeah, I love it.
Thank you. I had no idea you were into metal detecting. Like, how'd you get started?
Well, gosh, you know, I grew up in Massachusetts in a town called Burlington. And Burlington was right next to Lexington and Concord and Bedford. All the Revolutionary War history was right there. And in the woods behind my house, and I mean, just like when you search, you know, the woods are overgrown.
Yep.
And those woods were three cellar holes from the 1600s and one from the 1700s. And I may add that the one from the 1700s, now again, this is the woods. They're all grown in. There's cellar holes there. And the one from the 1700s was very, very historically famous because that's where John Hancock and Samuel Adams hid from the British one night.
No way.
You know that is there's a little stone there, a monument that was put there in the 1800s to commemorate it. And it's just trees all grown up. And this is my playground that I – the woods were my playground. Yep. Back there. And I'll just keep going into it where, you know – I used to find oyster shells everywhere, all over the road, all the ground. And I believed that there were land oysters as a little kid. I thought there were land oysters. And it was finding that and then relics and then bottles and things like that piqued my interest. And I knew the history of the area. So, and also I was a burgeoning electronic geek. I became an electronic engineer. I'm a used electronic guy. Metal detecting was a dream come true. I mean, that was it. I had to get a metal detector. Just find all the things in those woods and just learn about history and really get into it. And it changed my life. I mean, to this day, it's changed my life. And I'm sure you can affirm that, Michael. And what about you, Michael? Tell me your start.
Yeah, so my story is pretty similar. Ever since I was a young little boy, you know, 10, 11 years old, I was into collecting rocks and gemstones. And so my grandfather would take me out on the weekends to go up in the mountains of North Carolina. I'm actually from Charlotte, North Carolina. And so we'd go up in the mountains and look for emeralds, crystals, and other gems. And one day we were like, let's find some gold, because about 30 minutes from my house is Reed's Gold Mine. And it was one of the first places gold was discovered around here back in 1799. So I'm like, there's got to be big gold nuggets in these creeks. And so my grandfather, he got a metal detector that year for his birthday. My parents had purchased him one. And so we took it out to this creek where I knew there was a lot of history of gold mines and gold had been discovered there. And so I started using it and, you know, found some shotgun shells, found the normal trash, but I got one loud signal and it was just, you know, blowing my headphones out. So I dug down a few feet and I found an old shotgun. It was just like the trigger and it was missing the barrel and the stock, but that was enough to get me hooked to where, like, well, I didn't find a gold nugget, but I found a cool piece of history. And then so from that point forward, I was searching my backyard. My parents' house was built in 1930. So there was, you know, mercury dimes, old coins, wheat pennies, just you name it. And I got hooked.
Very nice.
Yeah. And so real quick, like the way I got my name Nugget Noggin is because my grandfather, I would always go over to his house and I talked about gold so much. Like I was like, hey, Pops, I want to find a gold nugget. And he's like, okay, Nugget Noggin, I'll take you out. And, you know, I had gold on the brain.
It stuck. It's wonderful. Wonderful moniker. I love it. Very cool. Very cool. I mean, yeah, you must agree. I mean, I have a lot of hobbies and this just blows them all away. It's just, I mean, you can't think of another hobby. The way I describe it is when anyone asks me about it, my friends, it's just like, what other hobby can you be outdoors and usually in an idealistic place, you know? You have a nice little threshold tone maybe in your head. You're kind of zen kind of going off, whatever your mind's going.
Yeah.
And then you get to say eureka sometimes.
Find something good.
I mean, nothing beats that.
And so the thing is, like, for those of y'all that have never used a metal detector before, like, it's very peaceful. Like, you put your headphones on, you go, you start swinging, you're looking for treasure. Obviously, you're going to come across trash, But if you have patience enough to keep in this, like once you get onto that good find, you dig the hole, you don't know what's going to be, you know, in the dirt, then you pull out like a silver coin or a button or a relic from the Civil War, like that just makes your whole day. And the thrill of that, like an excitement is what keeps us going. Like that's why we do this.
Yeah. I mean, it changed my, I had a love for history, but I mean, it made a deeper appreciation for it and stuff like that. And I'm sure a lot of Civil War down in North Carolina and stuff like that, you get a lot of Civil War even earlier.
Yeah.
So it's wonderful to learn all that stuff and find that. I mean, a lot of the stuff that I found in just the woods went on for a couple of miles behind my house, and I pulled up a lot of tons of musket balls, flintlock pieces, utensils and things like that. A lot of the stuff and buttons, and a lot of it I've donated to my historical society in the town that I grew up in.
That's awesome.
And I kept a few of the things like that because I've moved out of Massachusetts. I moved to California, where I wouldn't say it's old, but it's not as old as, you know, the East Coast, you know, so like that. So that got me into water hunting. So that's my primary thing is water hunting now.
I love water hunting.
Did you learn scuba?
Absolutely. Like, so the whole reason I did scuba was because I wanted to find stuff underwater, and we have so many like waterfalls and stuff in the mountains here. And I'm like, there's gotta be rings and jewelry people are losing. And then it kind of progressed into like, you know, Civil War artifacts in the rivers, old cannonballs, and just diving in South Carolina in the low country, like around Charleston, they have the Blackwater rivers. It's very dark. And I have like a helmet and I have flashlights mounted on it. And you can only see like 6 to 8 inches in front of you, but you'll find shark's teeth, the big megalodon shark's teeth. You'll find mallet bottles from like the 1700s. And so like there's more stuff to be found underwater than on land because not as many people have searched there. So it just opened up a whole new world for me.
Yeah, it's a whole other thing, and it's a lot. And I compare it, well, how I compare it, it's like on land, you got to do some digging, you know? When you find a target, you're going to dig. And in the ocean, it's a little easier. You can either fan it, or if you have a scoop, it's a lot easier moving the sand. So it's really nice doing that. And you get, you know, if you do the research in the at least what I do is when I hunt in the ocean, I follow the tides and stuff like that. So I know when the, you know, the wet sand going into the water when there's a big cut target. And you can clean up. If you know the research and you know how to read it, you know, it's fantastic.
So it's all about the technique, y'all. So like for beach hunting, there's a different technique on how to recover targets, on where to search. Whereas like if you're searching on land around an old house site, there's different places you may want to look with your metal detector. And there's other challenges you may have, like it could be infested with nails. And so you have to pick through those nails. There's different types of equipment that we use for the trashy sites. And then it's like, it's the same for river hunting. If you're in a river, I have different metal detectors. I have different gear I use for diving than like the beach. And in my opinion, the beach is pretty hard to hunt. Like that's a technique, man. Like if you know the beach well, then you go out there all the time because you have to hunt in the right spot where the waves wash up and all the heavy material collects.
I mean, there's been many times that I've gone to the beach and, you know, you don't find anything. So you have to learn how to read it, you know, and know conditions and stuff like that. And when those lines on the beach and stuff like that, it's one time I used to go to Hawaii a lot just to go metal detecting. So I went to Hawaii once on a frequent flyer. I stayed in the cheapest hotel on the island and I had our cheapest rental car. And every morning for 2 hours, I would go to every 4 or 5-star hotel and work in the water in front of each one of them. I was there for a week. So that was 14 hours I worked. I pulled home 20 men's wedding bands, 20 gold ones.
I can believe it. Mm-hmm.
Where's the engagement rings? I'm looking for the diamonds. You know, the last day, the last signal I get, I pull up an engagement ring. But it had been in the water so long, the diamonds had got knocked out of it.
You know? Oh, man.
But it was just ironic. But wow, you know. It's so cool. And there's times that I've been there and I found nothing, you know, it's just conditions can be conducive. If weather, maybe in April where sand is taken away and stuff like that. But, water hunting is a blast.
I went down to Puerto Rico back in July last summer and I did the same thing. I searched the beaches diving and detecting and I found like a dozen wedding rings.
What do you find? Do you think that diving, going underwater, how would you compare that to like hunting in wet sand? Do you find it an advantage?
I like diving easier because I get to lay down on the bottom and there's no like using a sand scoop and scooping up stuff and shaking it out. I just take my hand and fan back the sand and it's laying right there, and I can just swim around and find all this stuff a lot easier than having to stand up in 3 feet deep water and have waves crash on me. But like for the wet sand, if you mean like not underwater, but just where the wet sand at the shoreline, I still prefer in the water better because like anything from knee deep to, you know, 6 foot or more, especially past 6 foot, people can't reach with their detector in lakes and most bodies of water. So it's like virgin territory.
Have you encountered any kind of danger, like underwater or anything like that? Or
got really close to an alligator once. I guess you can say it got close to me. I was out on the boat, and my uncle was watching the boat, and I was down there diving in shallow water, and it's like in a swampy place in South Carolina. And you know, when you're diving, your bubbles come up, and since I was real shallow, when I would breathe, the bubbles would come up, and they would just make a lot of noise. And so I guess this gator thought that it was either an injured fish or another gator, and so it started charging my way. And then when it got like 20 feet from me, it went back because my uncle was clapping and hollering and screaming, trying to scare it off. But that would have been scary if I would have like, it wouldn't have bothered me, but if I would have surfaced right there when it was near my bubbles, I could have hit it. And then like, I wouldn't know what to do except swim away.
We've only had one incident. It wasn't with an animal, but it was just stupidity. You know, being at the, I was between Santa Monica and, I think it was Blue Roger State Beach, off the coast of Los Angeles. And I was in kind of like a non-beach area, walking through the rocks and going through the rocks and hunting as much as I could. And I did the stupid thing of turning my back on the waves. And I got picked up and bashed. And it wasn't a good experience. I mean, I was shaken really bad. I got out of it and I was pre-bruised and cut up, but it was thing that you know and was stupidity that I'll never do again.
For sure. As far as like the gear you use, what type of metal detector do you normally use for land, and is there anything different you use for water? For those that are listening that have maybe never done this.
I have a plethora of detectors. For the water, I use PI detectors. I have pulse induction.
Pulse induction.
And there are two types of detectors that are out there. There's pulse induction and very low frequency, or VLF detectors. Pulse induction work on a different thing where they can use discrimination. Usually they don't, but I have a one PI detector, which is made by Weitz. It's the TDI. Last detector they made. In fact, I cried when Weitz folded. I cried when Radio Shack folded too. But I have a Weitz TDI, and I also have a regular Weitz PI, and those are surf PI, and those are a main and a backup that I have, and those are primarily for the water. I'll use them in any kind of water condition, only water. I'll never use any of my land detectors in the water, even though I have a Minelab Equinox 800. That's a land detector, and that's what's the general purpose detector, where it does everything. It can be an underwater detector, it can be a gold detector, it can be a be a gold and jewelry detector. It does all those functions in different frequencies. I also have a Fisher F75 limited edition, which is great for iron. It's a great relic detector. And I also have a Fisher Goldbug 2, one of the originals. And they're all behind me, actually. I have them.
Yeah, I see them.
It's a nice display of my main floor that I use up here. And then I have a couple of others that I have a Prism 6T, which is a great little detector by Weitz, because it's a VLF detector, but it has all metal with tone ID in all metal. I haven't seen that in a detector, and it's wonderful to go in all metal and get a tone description of what's in the ground.
Yeah,
those are the main detectors that I use. And again, land or like say the Equinox and the Fisher and the Goldbug, and then the PIs are for the water. And yourself, Michael?
I actually use Garrett metal detectors. So for land, I would say either the AT Max or the AT Pro. And those are pretty much your general purpose detectors. They run between 13 and 15 kilohertz. So good for silver, gold, brass, relics, pretty much anything. Now the AT Pro is waterproof, so I will go in a freshwater river and use that one. But since it's only limited to like 10 feet deep, for more deeper places or the ocean, I'll use my Sea Hunter. and that's a pulse induction machine. So it's very well, it works very well in salt water. Whereas if you took a normal VLF machine, it would just chatter and go crazy in that wet sand. And so with pulse induction, it really, you know, that really helps for salt water or hot ground. Like if you're up in Northern Virginia around like Culpeper, where the dirt's just terrible. So mainly Garrett, I'm sponsored by Garrett Metal Detectors. So that's all I use. But I have used other things in the past, obviously. But yeah, I love the AT Pro, and that's like my main go-to detector, mainly just because I know it so well. And I've been using it for like 10, 11 years since it came out. And I've found so much with it. I couldn't tell you. It's just so much.
I was a whites guy growing up. That's what it was. It was in America. It was basically whites, Garrett, and Fisher. Those were the three.
Made
in
here.
In the 70s, yep. When I started. And I wanted the whites, but I drooled over the Garretts. I saw all the Garrett models, and it's like, I have to have one of those. And I never did. I just kept with whites and stuff like that. And maybe this, you know, since whites is gone, I think maybe my future may go into Garretts maybe someday.
Yeah.
So I'll have to try it out. I've been a whites fan. I've been talking to them for years. I even had one of the prototypes of the PI when it came back years ago. That's how much of a... how crazy I was about to.
You're serious?
That. Yeah, and it was. I had fixed it myself. I found problems in it because I was an electronic guy, and there was something wrong with it. And I remember fixing it. And then I had one model that I went to Hawaii, and it was faulty, and I couldn't fix it. It just was going off.
I had a bad search coil or something.
And the other guys out there with the other ones, and I would just lament. But oh no, oh gosh, but oh. What's your favorite thing that you found, Michael?
Yeah, so that's a really hard question for me because it's hard to pick one thing. And like, let me think. So I have found, I'd say my favorite thing or most unique thing that I think I found, and it might not really be the most unique thing in my collection, but it is to me, is a Confederate belt buckle from the Civil War. And, you know, it's just half of it, so it's the tongue. So it says CS, and I'm missing the other piece, but it's a pretty rare... like a rare find, like you don't find many of them. And so I've been detecting for close to 15 years now. And I found that like within my first year of starting, and I haven't found another one since. I've found a bunch of like US buckles and other Civil War relics like that. But so that Confederate belt buckle from Civil War is one of my favorite
finds.
I've
seen your collection. Yeah. It's pretty impressive. I mean, you got everything, coins and relics. And
I haven't seen your collection though. So like, what's your best find or favorite find?
As far as coinage, I think the only reason I find this an interesting story is where I grew up, in the woods behind my house, was where I got a lot of my old coins. My oldest, I think, or my first, was a 1724 farthing.
Nice.
Again, it was currency that was used in the U.S. before we started minting our own money. So it was, or maybe at the time, it was all in trade and stuff like that. But it was just amazing to find a coin that was not far from my backyard that, you know, when you're a kid, you think these woods are mine, but no, 300 years ago, some other kid thought these woods are mine. So someone dropped, you know, a coin there or fell out, whatever like that. So that has a lot of meaning for me to find that. Another coin that I found was by a pond where, because of drought or because of the water level had dropped, I was able to get deeper into the pond. And I found an 1822, capped bust dime. And I couldn't tell what it was. I mean, it was impossible. So I had to do electrolysis. I used the eraser on the pencil. I did everything to get out and kind of see what it was. And then when I looked it up, it was only 100,000 minted. It was a very rare dime for what it was and the value. So of course I sent it off to a pneumatic grading. And then when it came back, it was in
the
and it said corroded and cleaned.
How
I do. But it went down. I mean, it's a coin that's worth 30,000. Maybe it's about 10,000 now or something like that. But it taught me a lesson, and it was just a wonderful thing to find in your backyard, that kind of thing. But those are my two favorite finds. It's coinage, and it has just a little history because it was just near me. And you kind of know where every coin and every ring I find. You just remember, and you relate to going back in history about it. So it's so cool. It's amazing. So
absolutely. That reminds me, one of the coolest coins I found like locally in the States here in South Carolina was a 1721. It's a Spanish silver. I forgot the name of it, but it's a Spanish silver from 1721, and it's been cut in half. So I just have half of it. Yep, real. And well, actually, it's like a pistarine or something, I think they called it. But anyways, I found it at a Revolutionary War battle site. And this was on the side where Tarleton was and like the British. And so like I imagine they dropped it, like they carried it here from overseas. So
yeah,
kind of crazy.
Yeah, you think of that.
And it's in like pristine condition too. It's not worn or anything. It's just like as crisp and all the details on it. So
nice. Yeah. Have you found gold?
Well, I've never found a gold coin. And I was about to ask you that. Like I've never, and I've been looking for 15 years now. I found a gold nugget in Alaska and I found plenty of gold rings, but never a gold coin. So what about you?
I haven't found a gold coin. I found a ring with a gold coin in it, if that can count. Really digging on land and finding, you know, that glistening kind of piece come just shining at you. Someday we will, Michael. So
that right there goes to show people like how hard it is to find a gold coin, and a lot of people think all we do is find gold coins every day, but it's a lot. You got to dig a lot of trash.
Yeah. Here's an example. You can hear that. Well, you can see it. This is my I have a bank bag. But this is just all my coppers, silvers, and nickel. It's just loaded. It just, you can hear the sound of that. It just sounds so good.
I love that sound. Sound of money.
I love how you display it. You have all the display cases and things like that. It's wonderful to show people, kind of like a show and tell. Have you ever sold anything or?
I've sold a few small things. Like I've put a few Civil War bullets in cases and sold them. I've sold a few coins I've found, but nothing old or rare. I've sold a few modern rings, but that's still like mainly a dozen things I've sold in a decade. I don't really sell much. It's more about the history and keeping it. I have cashed in my modern clad and my quarters, nickels, dimes, all that stuff. And so I'll clean it up in the rock tumbler and then I'll put it back in rolls and go take it back to the bank. But I'm just not a seller. I do this for, even though a lot of stuff I found is valuable for sure. And worth a lot of money. I just do it for, cause I love it. And, I don't need the money from it. But if I ever did, yeah. I could sell it.
I've only sold one ring and it was only because I was coerced into it. I went to a poker game and I was wearing one of the rings I found in Hawaii, which was, it's made of like leaves. Like it's a big gold kind of a lei. I can't explain it, but it was a big men's wedding band. And the guy was just like, I want that. I'll give you whatever for it right now. And I was like, I don't sell anything, but I did. And I wish I had it back to this day, but that was the only thing I've sold. Otherwise I keep everything. It's great for show and tell, you know, and I call it a dowry. You can use it for the future. You never know. So it's so cool.
That's the thing. Like the two most important things in metal detecting, like one's research and the second one is just knowing your detector. And so we spend a lot of time doing research, whether it be online or, you know, at the library and stuff. And then we take the time to get permission to the property and then go search it with our metal detector. So, and then once we find something good, we have a connection to it. So we don't want to get rid of it. We just want to keep it and treasure it.
And it's wonderful you pointing that out, Michael. I mean, for anyone listening, those are the two big things, research and knowing your detector, really knowing detector, dig everything. If you're starting in this, you've got to get permission too. Yeah, you've got to research, you're going to go get permission, learn how to dig holes. I mean, you can't just dig a hole. You've got to cut a
nice
plug
plugs.
Properly. And I usually leave a hinge on it and kind of flap it over and dig down and stuff like that. But you want to leave the ground as the way you came in. It doesn't matter where you are or whatever like that. You don't want to, you know, a lot of people I wouldn't say a lot of people, but a lot of newbies or whatever don't know the rules. And you can see sometimes, you know, holes and stuff like that, which I just discourage against it. If everyone knows how to just dig a proper hole and leave it as you found it and you can enjoy the hobby and everyone else can continue to enjoy the hobby.
No, that's right. And so a lot of people, when they start, they search their backyard kind of like you. And I did the same too. And then once that kind of gets dried up of finds, they go somewhere else like a park or a public place. But then those places usually, you know, if you're allowed to detect them, they get searched a lot. And so you may not find but modern stuff. So you have to really do research and get permission on private property from the landowner if you want to hit a treasure trove.
Right,
yeah. You know? Unless you're going to be like us and go diving in the ocean.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because the house I grew up in was built in 1961, but it was the land there all around there was from 1600s. And in the coin, I mean, I found nails, you know, going out my yard for the first time. But the first coin I found in my backyard was an 1864 2-cent piece. And that.
Oh, that's my favorite one.
That, yeah. I mean, I didn't know 2-cent pieces existed.
Got your 2 cents worth, huh?
It was awesome. And it was funny because I came from a background where I was a stamp collector. And the reason I didn't collect coins is because I couldn't afford them as a kid. I was, you know. Stamps seemed, they were beautiful, and it kind of took you to different parts of the world, this kind of international stamps. So once I got into metal detecting, and then the coins started coming, and then the history of that, I sold my stamp collection, and I just enjoyed coins a lot more. It's just beautiful. So,
no, that's cool. Like when I started detecting, I didn't really know anything about coins, and then when I found them, I was like, oh, what is this? And I would like research it, and then I eventually got me a coin book, the U.S. coin book, and my goal was like to find all of them. Because it was so fascinating to me, all the different coins out there. It's like, how come nobody else was doing this? I mean, when I started, there was a lot of people doing it, but the internet was kind of low on, I mean, then you had TreasureNet and other forums, but on YouTube, there was not many people posting. So like, you couldn't go on there and type in metal detecting and find 100,000 videos like you can now. Back then, it was just me posting and a few others. So, but it's good to see everybody else is doing it. And I guess the TV shows and the YouTube has really spread the hobby.
Have you ever seen The Detectorist, the BBC show?
I have seen that. I watched one episode before. Yeah,
it is
funny.
It's a fantastic series, I must admit. I watched it and I was hooked. And not only because it's detecting, but it was a wonderfully written written series. I mean, you get into these characters. And I'm not someone who watches TV shows, really, anything like that. Yeah. But I cried on the last episode. It was awesome. I absolutely loved it. And they, you know, they were pretty true what they did, and they used the detectors, and it was pretty cool.
Yeah, they joke about the trash and stuff and pull tabs.
Do you hunt with friends usually, or do you have anyone that you hunt with, or do you do it solo? I know that I've seen your videos where you do go out with some people, but
yeah. So good question. I do like going with friends and other people because like you can share the excitement and the experience. But a lot of times, like I'm free during the week. Like Monday to Friday. And so I'll go out digging in the middle of the week and everybody's working. So I go by myself. So I'd say like 80% of the time I'm by myself. But when I'm diving, I try to be with someone. I have one friend, Dallas. He also has a YouTube channel called Man Plus River. And so I do a lot of treasure hunting with him when we go diving. And I have some other friends I go with for like house sites and spots like that. And plus I get a lot of connections through YouTube. I'm always getting different invites from people that have land or places for me to search. So that's like huge opportunities for me. And I don't have enough time to go to all of them.
I find that when I do solo stuff, especially on the beach, you get a lot of people coming up to you on the beach. A lot of people just always, you know, what are you doing? Yeah. What are you finding? Or following you around. So it got to a point where I'm thinking, I'm going to wear a nuclear suit and the face mask and everything. Then no one's going to come near me. They're going to think that I'm checking out.
Yeah. You got to go at 6 a.m. or 5 a.m.
That's what I used to do. I
used
to get up at 4:30 because I get free parking down in Santa Monica. Yeah. I'm not saying that was the reason why, but you're the first one down there on the beach and there's nobody there. It's a whole other world when it's dark out and the sun's coming up. Whew.
No, you're right, though. Like when I've hunted the beach in the middle of the day, it's a lot of people come up to me, especially kids. And of course, I don't mind that. I'll talk to them and they'll ask what I'm finding. But if you want to focus and find more stuff, you have to go when nobody's there.
Have you been asked to find something and gone on to find something, locate for someone who's lost something?
Yes, great question. So I've done a lot of that, especially last year, and it's mainly been underwater recoveries. So people they'll lose something at like the local marina at the dock, you know, they'll be getting off their boat and they'll jump onto the dock and their ring will somehow, who knows, fall off their finger or fall out their wallet. And, I'll go find it. But the way they find me is, well, there's a lot of ways, but the first way one person found me was they called the local dive shop and they said, hey, I need help finding my ring. I lost my ring. Like I need it found. And they're like, you should call Nugget Noggin. He comes here all the time to get, you know, scuba air and stuff. So it was kind of, that's how they found me. And I went out and put my scuba gear on, dove down. It was nasty. Oh man. Like this lake was just muddy water and you can only see like a foot with a flashlight. It was 25 feet deep, but I dove down and I found the ring with the metal detector and got it back to him. And I've also found a lot of cell phones, a lot of wallets. People lose their little coin purse wallets a lot and they'll call me out. I have done property stakes, a lot of property stakes for people. But yeah, so lately, especially through like my YouTube and Facebook, I'll have people reach out and say, hey, they'll say, hey, Michael, I lost a ring in this lake. You know, if you're ever in Oklahoma or Texas or wherever it is, if you can help me find it, that'd be great. And so I have so many of these, I can't do them now, but I like to help people find their stuff because it, like seeing them excited when they get it back after they thought it was gone forever, like yeah. Pretty good feeling.
Yeah. You know? I just got told, I have a friend here who wants me to go over to a couple's house, who's lost three wedding rings on the property. The guy lost two of his bands and then the wife lost her ring. So there were three rings somewhere on the property to go look for. But, yeah, it's the same thing. If I've had plenty of people ask for things where I've gone, find markers, find lost rings, things like mm-hmm. that. One time I had a friend in Los Angeles who had lost his ring and it was the ring was a heavy wedding band that never connected because in the middle was a giant diamond that just wedged in there. And that's what he had lost. And I had to find. So I'm going around his yard. I'm going, and I get this nice signal. Dig down. I found a gold ring. Now I didn't know what I'm finding. I don't know what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a gold ring. It was another ring I found. I'm looking for his ring. So I got to keep that one. And then eventually found his ring and gave that back. But
that's funny. Yeah, I've done that before too. So I think we covered it a little bit about our finds, like what we do with them. I mean, for me, like the old stuff and the coins and the cool things I display and I have in different cases and shelves and stuff in the house. And as far as like the trash, I have different bins, buckets for iron, aluminum, copper, and I'll eventually take the copper to the, you know, recycling place and get my money for it. But what do you do with your finds, Dave?
All my finds, I just have a little safe. I have everything in a safe.
You keep everything.
Well what I have mainly is just coins and jewelry. Everything else donated or if it's like, of course, junk, I'll recycle, whatever like that. But everything I have mainly right now that I find is just dedicated towards coins and jewelry. I don't have a lot of relics. I got a lot of musket balls. I have tons of musket balls. Dog tags. I have a lot of old dog tags that go back. What I like doing is I was married once before and I have my old wedding band along with my ring collection. So when I'm showing my rings, I always tell, I almost know where every ring I found, but I tell someone, you know, who's looking at them, I go, hey, try to pick out my old wedding band. And it's kind of more, it's more of like,
yeah, they
it's
don't
a little
know
fun to
one.
Have when you're showing your rings out. So that's where I keep my old one.
So how often do you go out metal detecting? Like, do you still go?
Yeah, it's wind down over the years. And the only reason why is just with family. I have family. I mean, it's sad to say, even with 2 years with COVID, hopefully this rock starts picking up again. I got to hit the road and start touring. So
then you'll be busy.
Yeah,
for a while.
And I've got to make up for these 2 years that I've lost. So, I mean, it's going to be a lot of work. I mean, it's not going to be all the way straight. There's going to be breaks. And I've taken my detector with me on the road. The only thing is, I've done it once or twice. The only problem with it is, you know, usually where I'm playing is in a city. And
there's nowhere to go.
And that's really the only kind of thing I can hunt in. A lot of these places, you're not either allowed to park, you know, not either allowed to hunt, or they're not really conducive for metal detecting or the cities that I go to. So I've kind of stopped that. But I should say I'm going to Wales in the beginning of April.
Oh, that's a good place to metal detect.
So I'm going to a place that's completely old farmland that I'm going to be. So I'm going to take advantage of that. I know it can be had. So that'll be my first time hunting in England, and I'm looking forward to it.
I was going to ask you that. That's cool to know. So that's like my favorite place to go metal detecting is England, and then you have Wales. And I've detected in both of them. In Wales, there's a lot of hills, so it's real up and down.
No, I know exactly. I know the location, and you're exactly right. it's funny, okay. Michael. I did years ago, I played the Isle of Wight Festival, which is a festival they have off the coast of England on the Isle of Wight. And we were taking the van to the venue, to the festival or whatever, going back. And I saw a group of detectorists all hunting in the field. When I got back to America, I looked up the site. It was Isle of Wight. And I wrote them an email and I said, hey, I saw you guys down there. I just, what did you find? I'm really interested like that. And one guy wrote me back. Oh, I forgot his name because I've been off Facebook for a long time. I don't remember. My apologies. I don't remember. But it was wonderful. The going back with the finds, he would post all the finds in Roman coins, sacks, and everything. It was just astounding, astounding what they can pull up there. You know, but
it's not like over here. They have a lot older history, so pretty cool.
It's funny, us coming from the East Coast going, it's old, and I go to California, oh, it's new. And then everyone in England, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah, they're like, that's modern rubbish.
Right. I have one question. I'm sure you'll agree, Michael, there's one nemesis, especially on the East Coast, that we both encounter when detecting in the summer.
Yeah, I know. It's so
hot. Heat too and humidity. Yeah. Mosquitoes?
Oh, mosquitoes. You got no-see-ums, gnats, especially in South Carolina. You cannot go out in the woods. You'll get ate alive. So it's terrible.
Having to coat myself in DEET or whatever the heck I would just be thick in stuff because nothing's going to stop you from metal detecting. I mean, you'll be breathing in mosquitoes and all the insects. You're breathing in as you go. There's so many around you. It's not fun. It's not fun. It's better when it's fall or some other conditions when they aren't out at these insects. But that's the only thing I don't like about land hunting. Sometimes it depends on the environment.
Yeah, for me, like once it hits, you know, July or at least June, I'm diving from June until October probably, and then I'm going to start land detecting again.
Nice. And I would imagine you don't get pretty much, the ground doesn't get frozen there, you know.
So I'm at a spot to where like the winters are very mild and no, it doesn't freeze. We did have snow this year twice. And one time it was like 8 inches. So that was crazy. But you know, 3 days later it was gone. Yeah. So we don't get frozen like up north or like Montana or Minnesota where they can't dig for several months and they're just, you know, they want to get out so bad.
Yeah. I mean, I remember you can't ride your bike or you can't go metal detecting. And that was you had to wait till spring, back inside, you know, so something. But it's funny because I've been watching, I've seen a lot of YouTube videos recently of people finding stuff because of the inclement weather. It's just unusually warm. I think in places that you shouldn't be hunting in this time of year, the ground should be frozen, but people are pulling up stuff right now. So, yeah.
If it wasn't for metal detecting, like this hobby or passion, whatever we want to call it, like, what do you think you would be doing? Would it be worse or bad or good? Or like, how do you think metal detecting has like impacted your life?
Oh, gosh. I think what it's mostly done is what I've already, I've said. It's just gave me a much deeper appreciation to history, I think. I think that's really what it's done. If I didn't have metal detecting, I don't think of course, where I grew up there's an appreciation, but I don't think it would be as deep as what I had. But I think that's the extent of it. I think those are the main two things, I think. What about yourself, Michael?
It is a hard question. I've thought about it before. I guess it's pretty deep, but like without metal detecting, I wouldn't have met thousands of people all across the world. Like there would have been no way I would have made all these friends that have the same interest as me, which is just finding stuff out the ground. And you could say I'm obsessed with it, which is it's a great obsession. It's not bad. And I'd say it led me the right way when I was younger, like 14, 15, 16 years old. I kind of stayed out of trouble, 16, 17, 18 too, like because I just wanted to go metal detecting. So, and especially with my grandfather and my dad, we would connect together through metal detecting. We'd go out on the weekends. So it kind of brought me closer with them. But I would definitely say just like without metal detecting, I wouldn't have traveled all over the world because I don't go anywhere unless it's for metal detecting. Like if I'm going across the world to Germany or England, it's because I'm metal detecting. Like, you know, I'm not just going there to sightsee, even though I will do that while I'm there. But yeah, so it's helped me to meet a lot of people and connect with the past. And I just have a like you said, a better connection to history, and I appreciate it more. So, and then like, and finding people's lost items too, like finding their lost items like that, that's like a way to, you know, serve people as well,
yeah,
help them.
Yeah. Yeah. Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, Michael, thank you. I mean, it was wonderful talking to you.
Yeah. Same to you.
Thanks for listening to the second episode of 4AD Forages. Join us next month, where we'll have Alado Negro in conversation with Laraji.